Chapter 9 of Green Grey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This legamous recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. It will be a cold night at Green Grey Homestead, the coldest you remember. You've forgotten all the others. And after you've had supper and washed up and put the bread away and scattered the crumbs from the table onto the floor with the dishcloth and made the humpy look shipshape, you'll be crouched in front of the fire, not reading the paper as some would, but smoking hard and thinking. It'll run through your head that now, when fats are scarce, is the time to get a good price from the butcher for the two steers he offered you a low figure for in the middle of summer. Finally deciding to sell them for a fiver apiece, you'll turn your thoughts to the bee's nest in the gully near your cultivation paddock. It's been there in that silver-leaf ironbark for 3 years. Your neighbours know of it, too, and some have wondered why you have never robbed it. Just now you feel you would like a feed of honey. You're tired of the same old jam, melon jam mostly, with pumpkin seeds in it, bought at the local store. You haven't tackled a bee's nest since you were a kid. Still, you were pretty good at robbing them then, never getting more than a dozen stings or so. And you reckon that, this old silver leaf being hollow as a cave, there should be a couple of kerosene tins of honey in it, at least. More than enough to do you for the rest of the winter, and perhaps another half a tin or so that you could pass to the Murphys. You can give liberally when it's your own honey, and it's not costing you anything. But just when you're wondering if you've got a piece of mosquito net anywhere in the humpy to wear as a veil, so as the bees won't have it all their own way, Curly Ginty, from down on the plain, will walk in on top of you, complaining of the blasted cold, and telling you you're all right in here, Dick, beside a burning fire. Of course, your thoughts will be suddenly scattered, and for the moment you'll feel kind of ashamed that he caught you sitting there thinking to yourself. For Curly, a big fellow with longish hair and a constant grin and a loud voice, isn't a close friend of yours, and has rarely paid you a visit before. You'll know, though, that he's in with the Rileys, who do a bit of horse-dealing and horse-breaking, and you'll go to Rye's to welcome him. But Curly won't know any ceremony. "Stop where you are," he'll tell you. "What do you think I am, a prince who can't look after himself?" Then, reaching for a stool, he'll adjust it near the fire, and he'll look curiously round your humpy before beginning to talk. Then he'll talk loud, and laugh loud too, and often. He'll ask what you did with a little jumping horse you used to have. And while you're trying to tell him, and feeling proud about it, he'll be standing up, stirring the fire, by kicking it together with his boot, and talking about something else. Then he'll sit again, not having listened to a word you said, and start telling you the pranks the Rileys and he got up to one time over the range with hungry Horan's cattle and horses. He'll tell you how they took a mob of old Hungry's cows as coaches to the scrub one moonlit night, and lost the whole jolly lot, and how they used to ride the tails off Hungry's horses that were spelling there, and swim them in a waterhole the next day to wash the sweat marks off em. You'll get so interested in all Curly is telling you, and the way he's telling you, that you won't notice the sparks that fly out of the fire, and lodge in your lap, and burn small holes in your moleskins. And the number of times he'll rise and swing his arms about, demonstrating and kicking the box over, will make you laugh. And when you fancy, which you will, in the middle of it, that you heard a tree fall, he'll remember a song Dan Riley used to sing in the camp at night, and break out loudly into the first verse of it. Then you'll laugh till you hear the report of a gun somewhere, and you'll suddenly stop and listen curiously. He'll listen with you. "That sounded in the gully somewhere," you'll reckon, wonderingly, with your ears still cocked. "If there's going to be any shooting here, I'll leave it to you, Dick," Curly will say. "You got a gun, I haven't. I'm off." And snatching his hat out the door and into the night he'll go without even saying so long. Beyond the report of that gun there'll be nothing, except fleas, perhaps, to disturb your rest during the night. But in the morning, when you're rounding up the milkers that camp in the gully, you'll wonder for a moment if you're really awake or walking in your sleep. The tree with the bee's nest will be cut down and lying across your cultivation fence and robbed of the honey. "So that was your game, Mr. Curly Ginty," you'll explode, and almost choke. And in your mind you'll see the Rileys felling the tree and getting the honey while he was entertaining you. Then you'll hear the gun report again, signalling him that the job was finished. Turning away, you'll vent your feelings on the loitering cows. "Get along, blast you! Get along!" you'll hiss. And you'll keep on blasting them till they're in the yard, and you're sitting under one of them, squeezing the milk from her. End of chapter 9.